All right, y'all, here we are. Bonus episode of the Permaculture Pimp Cast. Here I am. Usually we talk about permaculture preparedness and practical living, but today we're going to throw in the last P, and it's probably paranormal. And this show is going to be, look, we talked a while back on the YouTube channel, and I told you at that time that we were going to have to unpack this with an expert. And let me just get into the highlights. I just spent 3 weeks out there building an earth ship in Arizona. And unbeknownst to me, when I first decided to do this, I had no idea that I was working at the base of Mount Graham. And I made a number of, during that video, I talked about how Tom Horn and Chris Putnam wrote a book called Exo Vaticana. And there's been a number of things that they've written concerning the Vatican. But that book in particular had to do with what's going on Mount Graham. Now, there was a series of weird events that unfolded that I didn't really know how to make sense of. And I'm not even sure after today I'm going to have any sense that I'm going to make any sense of it. So we brought in, we're waiting for him to arrive right now. And, Joel Thomas from Kill the Mockingbirds podcast. And look, y'all, he's about to arrive. Is that Joel? Is that Joel coming down from a Chinese weather balloon? Hold up, man. He just got shot down. Oh, snap. He's coming down, y'all. He's in a parachute. He's wearing wet weather boots and a Batman costume. Oh, snap. Right here in the studio. Joel Thomas from Kill the Mockingbirds podcast. What's up, homie?
Brat! Brat!
There you go.
Ready to go, baby. Let's go. Let's tear him up today. Yes.
Man, I'm since excited, when do you man. Get transportation on the Chinese weather balloon, homie?
Man, I got my ways.
you point your gun in the other direction and shoot to go forward.
Joel, I want to first.
Hunter Biden, man, he hooks me up with anything Chinese.
There you go. Hey, hopefully that was the only thing coming out of that weather balloon, bro. Yeah, you get chemtrailed on the way down. Hey, bro, I want to.
I had my suit on, man. I'm good.
I was going to say you were coming down in wet weather boots and a Batman costume or wet weather boots and a G-string. It was going to be wet weather boots either way, bro. You don't know if you're landing in it's a water landing or what. Hey, bro, I wanted to commend you right off, man. We're going to get into the topic, y'all, but listening to Joel and Sean Chris, both of them, their partnerships, they partner up on a podcast called Kill the Mockingbirds. Fantastic podcast. And I was out doing dishes the other day. Actually, I was cutting up a pig in the kitchen the other day. And I was listening to your last podcast, and it was regarding Tupac. Now, I grew up at a time when Tupac, all this stuff, I was in the Army, man, when he was big. And when at that time in the Army, you were basically sequestered from the outside world. So I had to learn about this guy long afterwards. I was never at that time. I grew up on a hip-hop when it first emerged, Sugar Hill Gang, stuff like that. And then by the time I get out of the Army, well, it's changed completely. It's 180 degrees out of phase from what it was when I went in. Well, anyway, I didn't know a whole lot about Tupac on the way in, but I got to say, your program the other day, man, blew my mind, not only because it was presenting all these facts that I didn't know, but I wanted to commend you, and I talked about it, honestly, with William in the last podcast, yeah, about how so many white people are so afraid to criticize black culture, or should I say the lack thereof. Now, being a person of color myself, I'm listening to you say this, and I'm like, dude, I'm telling William, you got to hear this, man. Yeah. He is not afraid to tell the truth, and he could care less about who it is, whether it was an Asian culture. I'm pretty sure. I mean, you jumped out of a Chinese weather balloon, so, you know.
And Joel's repping the gingers, too.
Bam. Yeah. Man, I wanted to give you – I'm serious, bro. I was going to text you, but I wanted to wait until we got on the show. And what makes you that brave, man, really? Because so many people are so afraid. If you're a white person, you feel like that you can't even criticize – lack of black culture anyway, and you did it masterfully and you did it professionally.
Well, I can't speak for Sean, but I know he grew up in a similar come up with hip hop as I did, because, you know, we both did hip hop music. I can't even tell you how long now, 20 odd years for both of us. There's a level of, you know, connecting with that culture whenever you're coming up in it. And I had, you know, I was fortunate enough, a lot of black people took me in. And the reason why they did was because I wasn't scared to say what I wanted to. From the outside, you get a lot of white people that are like, oh, look at this wigger, or look at this guy, he wants to be black. But that was never the case. And I know for Sean, it was never the case either. We were just white guys that loved hip hop, and we were both really good at it. So we got a lot of, we connected with a lot of people from all cultures, really, but definitely black people. But I was never scared to say what I wanted to on tracks either. Like, long before I started going down the anti-system road, you know, I kind of, honestly, I say that, but I think I was always kind of anti-system. I think I just kind of grew more into what I am today. But I think that's why I never had a lack of a backbone. I mean, I think about even before I did hip hop, I was obsessed with basketball. I got a scholarship to play basketball in college. I was really good. And I used to go to a lot of the inner city spots and play ball. And I would be one of the few white people out there playing basketball. I think there's a certain level of respect if you're good at something and people know that you're not doing it for any other reason, but that you just love it. So I think I don't have any, I don't know. I've just never felt like I needed to cater to anybody, because I feel like when you start catering to people, then you definitely aren't speaking the truth anymore.
Well, I definitely appreciate that. I mean, it showed, it was so remarkable to hear you and Sean talk about that and not really care one bit, because nearly every person I know of, whether it be on YouTube or the podcast realm, even some of the biggest ones out there would have couched everything that you guys openly said, and it would have been mealy mouth. And, you know, honestly, it told me, man, these guys are for real. I already knew you guys were for real, but it even put an exclamation point when I decided, when I reached out to you. In fact, I was still out in Arizona when all this went down. I knew that I would get the straight scoop from you and Sean, or whatever the case may be. And that really just put the icing on the cake. But honestly, everybody go out there, check out Kill the Mockingbirds podcast. And that one on Tupac, man, you dropped so many, I mean, manhole covers on my head regarding that whole thing that I didn't even know.
Because a lot of people view Tupac as like the kind of the counterculture, I would say. Mm-hmm. But he was just another industrial plant to make you think that he was part of the counterculture.
Yeah, they have to do that, right? Yeah. And I won't go into too much of it here, but, you know, COINTELPRO was really big in infiltrating any of these anti-the-system movements. You know, contrary to what people believe, the KKK was an anti-system movement,
yes,
too,
it was,
when they started. So they were, the Black Panthers were, you had a lot of these civil unrest groups that started around that time, too. COINTELPRO was built not only for their MKUltra and what they did there, with Project Janus and all that, but it was also to infiltrate these groups that started with grassroots movements so they could control them. It's like BLM, right? Because BLM, when it started out, was a grassroots movement. It had nothing to do with what it does now. When they infiltrated it and ended up, you know, changing the whole makeup of it, that's what you see now. This is this BLM that's a corporate entity that's controlled by George Soros and all the like of those awful people.
Man, you got that right. Man, yeah. The list is long. Even I remember like I was involved in radio at the time, and I spent a fair amount of time even around like when they had the Occupy movement. So I'd done a lot of investigating on these people. It started off, I remember just like yesterday. I know we got you on here for different reasons, but I just want to echo that what I saw is that during that whole Occupy thing, we were living near the Kansas City area, and I was going down there thinking, okay, well, these are people that don't like the system. Well, I'm an anarchist at that time, or liberty minded, whatever, you know, people misunderstand the definition of the word anarchy, just means the absence of government. But anyway, I was going down there, and these people were genuine. They had the best of intentions. And then lo and behold, they have this little parade. And then how about this, Joel? The only people that show up to this parade that were doing any violence were all wearing masks. And then at one point, they're doing this march, and I'm kind of monitoring this from a newsman's point of view. And some of these guys who are wearing masks are kicking at these doors. and they're doing all the violence. One person goes up there, snatches the bandana off the face of this one guy, and everybody says, "Hey, that's the cop down in the plaza." And then this dude runs off. So it was the cops that were in the crowd that were doing all the violence. They were basically, what do you call those people?
Job security.
Well, no.
Job security.
No, what? No, you call those people, there's a French name for it. When you stick a plant in the crowd to make everybody look bad. But I saw it then. It was COINTELPRO ultimately. And then, you know, the whole movement got sideways. And people like Glenn Beck came down on it like a ton of bricks and a number of others. But I was there. I saw it from the very beginning, and I saw how it became co-opted. But, Joel, let me go ahead because I kind of gave the overview. I wanted you to come in to help me unpack what happened one of the last days I was there near Mount Graham. Now, I didn't tell the whole story. I just kind of – and, in fact, I didn't even tell you, I believe, the whole story. Or maybe I did.
You didn't tell me anything. You just told me that you wanted to have me on the show and you had something to tell me.
Yeah.
You told me around about what was going on because, you know, the Lucifer Telescope and where you're at. And you said, "Hey, we'll get it on here and we'll talk about it." So this is fresh for me. So anybody listening right now, I don't know what Billy's about to blow my mind with.
Well, he is well-versed in all things of this matter. For a second there, bro, I was thinking this might be Jerry Springer, bro. We brought you on this show. We don't know what we're going to talk about. Hey, Joel, let's do this blood test, bro. Okay, I got a lamb running around here with a man's head on it. What's up with that? We got some Nephilim sheep up in here, bro.
We got some chimera sheep.
Check this out, bro. And none of the audience has heard the full extent of it. I'm just going to kind of break it down. So I did a video, and I was at the base of Mount Graham, and I'm telling everybody about the Vatican and how back in 85, they essentially teamed up with Arizona State University and a number of other interests. But the Vatican has majority control, or gained majority control, kicked out the Apache and everybody else who saw this mountain as one of the seven most holy mountains, or five most holy mountains on planet Earth. Anyway... I went out there, did that video. Some folks were tripping. Some were, we're having a little bit of technical difficulty on this end. I don't know if you hear what sounds like helicopter blades going on right now.
It's the government, man. They don't want us talking about this.
That's right, brother. You know what's going down. Chinese weather balloons and everything else. I did a video, bro. And then check this out. As the day goes on, you know, I'm out there working on this Earth ship during the day, which I know you're a big fan of. And at night, I found out that I couldn't go up to Mount Graham because this time of year is full of snow, so I can't go up there. So the next best thing, I discovered that they had this place called Discovery Park. And I look it up, and apparently on Saturday between the hours of 4 and 9 p.m., these people come out with their telescopes and they try to bring in the public. Anyway, I show up early. I even have video of this, which I do have.
Yeah.
I have video of this, and I show up a little bit early, and while I'm there, I go inside, and I'm like, "Hey, sorry to bust up your Klan meeting up in here, but I heard y'all doing like some," so I kind of break the ice that way, and they're like, "Okay," and they realize I'm just kidding around. I'm like, "Hey, heard we're looking at telescopes. I hear you got this really big telescope right here at this little Discovery Center." Now, keep in mind, this is at the base of Mount Graham. So they're like, "Man," they're like, "you'd think Michael Jackson just walked in this place." I said, "Hey, I also have a YouTube channel. Would you guys mind if I filmed you?" So I filmed the intro right there saying, "Hey, okay, hey, y'all, I'm here." Now, of course, these people don't know that they think I'm nothing more than the ordinary tourist. Well, I had told all of the other people I was working on this Earth ship with where I was going and what they had going on that night. And here it was, Saturday night. So the others said, "Yeah, we'll show up." So they go do their thing, and then they're supposed to show up there. At the time, I'm the only person there. Other people show up. They bring in their telescopes, and apparently the people there are going to show them how to use it. Okay. So the night goes on. They put us through this presentation, a bunch of nonsense. The presentation was like stuff you would learn in junior high, something like that. Okay. As this unfolds, they're like, "Okay, so let's get done with this presentation. We're going to go outside." Now, by this time, one of the girls that was working on this Earthship thing had showed up during the presentation. Now, a lot of these folks that are working on this Earth ship, dude, they're no hope, no soap, end of the rope, broke. So when they were here, this place was giving out free cookies, dude. They showed up like this thing was, dude, they showed up like Antifa, man, like you know, just Joe Biden just showed up somewhere.
Antifa found some bricks.
That's what I'm talking about. Well, dude, they were busting through them cupcakes like a monkey through a cup. I mean, they were tearing everything up, dude. Anyway, we get outside and then we start looking through the telescopes and they're showing us this and that and this. And I am trying to find a way to ask these people about, you know, what's going on top of Mount Graham. Now, I have no idea. I'm thinking, okay, well, some of these people must know something. So one guy's out there showing me this telescope and he's showing me Jupiter, whatever the case may be. And then I just kind of ease into it. I'm thinking, dude, the night's kind of moving on. I better get to it. And I'm like, hey, man, what's going on up there with that telescope? And he says, you know, he gives me the typical answer. Oh, you know, it's just a telescope. I said, have you been there? Oh, yeah, I've been there a number of times. I said, what about that binocular telescope up there? He says, oh, yeah, it does all kinds of cool stuff. And then I said, well, I heard that it sees in the infrared realm and they're looking at things that are like far, far away. And they're looking at exoplanets and things that may hold life. And then he just kind of hushes up a little bit. So I'm thinking, okay, well, you know, I didn't make anything of it. Next thing I know, I'm walking back up to the building, which is not more than 30 paces away from where these telescopes are. They have us in this little outcropping they call a kiva. Well, get back up there, go inside the building, and there's a guy this lady introduces me to. She was one of the ones that was in the intro of the YouTube video. Hey, this is a guy. He came all the way from North Carolina, and, you know, he was asking about this and that. And so I asked this guy. I did not know what his position was at the time. I said, yeah, I was wondering about what's going on up there. He says, hey, dude, this is going to be a really fun night for you because check it out. We have Father so-and-so. I don't remember his name. He did tell me, but I don't remember. Father so-and-so, who actually runs these telescopes up there, he's going to be here shortly. He's going to show up after a while. And I'm like, cool. And so here's where it starts getting a little bit weird, bro. I ask him pretty much what I asked the first guy, but with a little twist. I'm like, hey, there's this book. It's called Exo Vaticana. And the second I said I didn't even get Vaticana out of my mouth. He looks over at the woman. They look at each other and they look at me and their countenance changed at that moment. And at that same time, they're like, oh yeah, we know about those guys. They made this claim and that claim. I said, you know, because I know the story inside and out, at least from the book. I said, well, they're saying that they're looking at these exoplanets and they're doing all this. And then I bring up Father Guy Cosmonago or Consul Magno, and he's one of the movers and shakers at the Vatican. And then it gets a little bit more weird. Now, like I said, this thing goes from like 6 to 9. I'm sorry, I misspoke earlier. It actually goes from 6 to 9 p.m. It's only about 7 o'clock, and there are a number of people there. And then about that time, the guy pulls me off to the side, takes me into this little, it's like a museum that they have there that I didn't even know existed. And he's walking me back there. He's kind of agitated a little bit. And he and I are the only ones in this museum. Walks me all the way to the back of this thing. And now I've listened to far too many episodes of Kill the Mockingbird to know how this story's going to turn out. And I'm thinking, okay, man, here, me and this dude are back here in the back and I'm over here looking for my escape route, or thinking of option B, I may just have to go upside his head if this thing gets stupid. And I'm in the back of here and he's showing me pictures of this binocular telescope and he's saying, you know, he's downplaying it. And so now I just put out the ace card. I'm like, hey, well, I said, according to this book, they're saying that, you know, I basically recounted the whole story about how the Vatican took this mountain from these natives. And I said, you know, they're talking about how they're looking at these exoplanets, and they even write in the book that they have to wait for armadas of spaceships to get out of the way sometimes for hours before they can even focus their devices. And apparently this is like a nightly occurrence whenever they open this thing up. And so at that point, you can see this guy get totally annoyed. And then it occurred to me, I'm like, at that point, why on earth do you have me in the back of this museum when everything you're showing me is right out there in the foyer before we even get in here? And then I got to thinking about that girl that was there, and I'm like, okay, man, we're in the desert, dude. I ain't trying to have this girl be some statistic. It's dark outside, man. And so I'm trying to make my way out, and he's trying to hinder me from getting out. Finally, I, you know, do the little book around this dude a little bit, get outside there. And the whole time he's trying to keep me in this museum. I get outside, I get over there, and then I go out where I last saw this girl, which was by that telescope that was outside. And now keep in mind, the last thing I told her was I was going to go to the bathroom. I go out there, she's not there. And so I go back in and I'm thinking, okay, let me go check the cookies because I know she's grubbing. So I get inside there, she ain't by the cookies and she ain't by the hot chocolate. And about that time, the other people from the Earthship build start showing up. So three more guys show up and one of them, very, very awake, even turned him onto your show. I'm sorry to make this thing all long and drawn out, but here's where it gets even crazier. So it's about maybe a little bit after seven at this point. Everybody's there. And now they're like, all of a sudden, hey, we're packing up. I'm like, packing up? Yeah. I said, dude, ain't this thing supposed to go till 9 o'clock? And they're like, nope, packing up. And then I find out that I should say this back. The guy who gave the initial presentation, His name was John. Didn't catch his last name. The guy had told me that he was the top dog in charge of every telescope on the top of that mountain until about 2 years ago. And he stepped down and retired. So I'm thinking, okay, I'm going to find this dude. I go over there. He was very, very pleasant, very nice. He was one of the initial people I met. I go up to him and I try to say something to him. And he's like, gotta go. And then I go back to the guy that took me in the museum. And I'm like, hey, where's Father so-and-so? Oh, he ain't going to make it. Gotta go. And I'm like, okay, this all got weird. Real weird, real quick. Now, Joel, I didn't see any chupacabras out there. I didn't see any big feet. I didn't see anything of that sort. Didn't even see any strange phenomenon in the night sky. But Mount Graham, why? I can't for the life of me understand. Surely I'm not the first person ever to make an inquiry at something like this. I start asking just very benign questions, and they shut the whole thing down. You got any thoughts on any of this?
Well, I mean, clearly they knew that you were there for other purposes than their quote unquote education or brainwashing that they wanted to give you guys. So there's that. They knew the book, you know, I find it fascinating where they try to discredit books that are out there, but they know them inside and out. They know the books. So I always find that pretty funny and telling when they act a certain way over literature that's out there. So that's pretty telling too. Also, I'll be honest with you, Billy, you might have been in some trouble there. Like when he put you back there in that museum where you didn't even know existed and you were back there by yourself and he was trying to corral you. I mean, you might have got your wish. You might have got to see some stuff that you wanted to see, but you're going to be dead right after.
Bro, I'll be honest with you, man. It was so creepy back there. And this guy, my heart doesn't pump Kool-Aid, dude. He better bring some friends. I'll tell you that much. Cause I had every intention to put him through a 5-minute flurry of fists if he got stupid.
Why Mount Graham though? Like, why do they need that specific mountain? Cause they have a mountain range out there. I mean, it's a doggone Rocky Mountain.
Well, I did ask that question before Joel gets to it. I did ask that question to him. I said, why that mountain? That mountain is considered one of 5 or 4 holy mountains to all natives on the planet. You got that mountain, you got Mount Hermon, you got Mount Ararat. I don't know what the other mountains are, but the point is, I asked him why that mountain. I'm like, dude, I'm looking at other mountains. And then he gives me this mealy mouth answer that didn't make any sense. And I asked myself, could it be that it's a Stargate?
Well, I mean, you kind of went down the right road when you started talking about Mount Hermon and started connecting those dots, because when you start thinking about holy mountains across the globe, what happens on these holy mountains? What happened on Mount Hermon?
Oh, the Watchers came down. That's right.
The Watchers brought the women up there, and that's where the Nephilim were created. You look at a lot of these mountains, holy mountains, it's where Nephilim are buried or Nephilim come out of, because there's all kind of caverns and cave systems underneath these. I'll be honest with you, Mount Graham's almost a mystery, even when you try to dig on it. There's not a lot to it. There's more on Mount Hermon than there is, Mount Graham. But I did find in some of my research some interesting dots that can be connected with Mount Graham. When you really think about it, you think about the Lucifer telescope. That is mind-blowing in and of itself, that they have a telescope up there called the Lucifer telescope. They don't hide it. It's not hidden. They tell you that's what it is. How the name is created also connects some other dots too. It was actually scientists of five German universities that installed it. So they actually installed this there. And the best part is they say they named it Lucifer because of its technical characteristics. What does that mean? What does technical characteristics of Lucifer mean? I get that it means the light bearer, but why do they want to call a telescope that's supposedly holy, part of a holy Vatican, part of the Holy Church, a name that's clearly, even in the Catholic Bible, used as Satan, Satan's name? So why do they name it that, something that they clearly respect? You have to start digging there, too. When you start connecting, like, the German universities, Germans, so are we going to connect this back to times of the Nazis? I mean, there was a lot going on back then in World War II, when it came to connections with extraterrestrials, with Hitler, with them getting, check this, technology from these beings. Now, this is seen throughout history, where these beings are giving us technology and we're having huge leaps forward in advancement right after. Right? So that even connects when you start going deeper, why Hitler was trying to get to Antarctica. You know, what's going on in Antarctica? We can't even get there. There's a little sliver, a little piece that we're even allowed on if we want to go there. All that connects back to, I think, this mountain. So what happened on this mountain? I mean, we can guesstimate and say that, hey, there's a Stargate. There could be, because I can tell you right now, that's generally where a lot of these stargates have been placed by fallen angels, were on top of these mountains like Mount Hermon and a lot of these portaling systems. There was another thing too that I ran across that I thought was really interesting. Well, before I even get to that though, it's ran by the Jesuits. So if you know anything about what's going on up there, this is the Jesuit order of priests that actually run this telescope up there. And oddly enough, when it comes to any of these quote unquote, like, secret missions or special missions, these special tasks, it's always the Jesuits. It's never like the actual Catholic order per se. It's the Jesuit section that takes care of all this stuff. I mean, that's when you start breaking down like the Black Pope, like Arturo Sosa, who, if anybody knows anything, there's three popes. You've got the Black Pope, Arturo Sosa. You've got the White Pope, which we all know is Pope Francis, who is actually a Jesuit too. He's the first white pope to be a Jesuit. So that's never happened before. So that's also very telling too, what the Jesuits actually mean to the advancement of globalistic plans, right? They've been a part of this from day one. And then you got the Gray Pope. If you know anything about Pepe Orsini, the Orsini family.
Oh, yeah.
Five popes have come out of the Orsini family, and like 40-something cardinals throughout history. So they're one of the most powerful families in the world. A lot of people don't know about some of these names that actually run the world. You know, we all get caught up in the Rockefellers and the Rothschilds. Those are just the front men. They are powerful and they are part of the elites, but they're the front men. They're the ones that are there to take the brunt, take the hits. They're the ones that we can sit there and point at and be like, those guys, they're the elites. They do that on purpose. They don't want you knowing about some of these other families that run it. But it all connects to this Catholic agenda. And you think about it too, the auditorium hall in the actual Vatican is built like a reptilian head. It's actually built like a snake head. If you've ever looked at it from the outside and looked at the eyes and you go inside, it's got the fangs that come behind the throne. Jesus coming out of the ground, which is super weird, with a bunch of bodies coming all around him. And the way that his hair is shifted around him, it actually looks like a snake head. So when you're really looking at it, it's not actually Jesus. They're actually showing Lucifer. And this ties back into the Lucifer telescope. All of this connective tissue to what they're really trying to achieve here. Now, like the telescope, I don't know if it's a cover up for what's actually going on up there. It's very telling the name. So I don't know if it's like you said, maybe it's an actual Stargate. Maybe it's not a telescope at all. Or if it is a telescope, it's still just a cover for what else is going on up there. Also, you know, some of the digging that I was just a little bit I was able to find about, there could be tunneling systems from the top that go down into the mountain. And there could be all kinds of government facilities inside of the mountain.
It's funny.
So you, that could be going on as well.
Joel, I wanted to point this out because you're hitting on something that I was reluctant to ask you about. You've already breached the topic. Let me first say that the native people, according to Tom Horn in that same book, consider Mount Graham exactly that, a Stargate. They consider that a Stargate. The native people do. And in fact, they consider that whole area from Phoenix all the way over to Mount Graham and then some pretty much holy ground. Not necessarily holy ground, but things where unusual things unfold. Now, I reached out to one of my friends while I was out there and I told him about what I was about to do as far as going up Mount Graham. And now I'm not sure if you're aware of it, but a while back it was uncovered by a Spanish explorer and I can't think of his name, but basically this underground tunnel system that he called the Shinkana. And it was exposed even wider by Steve Quayle in one of his documentaries and Timothy Alberino. And they talked about how this tunnel system, I mean, massive to where you could drive two Mack trucks on top of one another. And every single place where this tunnel came to the surface, it is apparently very well known that the Catholic Church swoops in. If there's giant bones, which clearly they found a number of them out there, they find giant bones and they also put monasteries in the spots where some of these places have been known. William, you were going
to... Yeah, I wonder if they use strip mining as a way to cover up evidence as well, because there's that huge strip mining pit where, like, it looks like complete devastation. So they could have wiped out a whole tunneling system or covered it up or filled it in.
But going right back to... That's a good point, but going right back to Mount Graham is that this person I reached out to... bro, you could have knocked me over... when he said his information told him that underneath that, what we suspect might be a portal or a, you know, some means to, I don't know, Stargate, whatever you want to call it, that underneath there is another CERN facility. So when you said that there's probably, who knows, this thing could be tunneled up one side, down the other. When he told me that, it overlaid with what you said. So I'm curious if maybe... Just maybe, and this is all just guessing to a certain extent on my part, because honestly, in that book also, they cite through email some of the biggest movers and shakers in that. I mean, basically, they're saying, look, we're expecting these aliens to come in. They're going to have a new doctrine, and you're not going to be expected to drop your Christianity immediately or whatever your faith is. But when these people roll in, these are the Jesuits that you just spoke of, Joel. The Jesuits you just spoke of writing back saying, and then later on they try to lie and say they never wrote it. Well, it's right there in the email saying that we expect these people to come in at some point in time. They're going to deliver a new doctrine and you're going to be expected in time to adopt this doctrine. Not overnight, but you will be expected to adopt it. So does this telescope along with what could be a CERN facility and a Stargate? I mean, I know you research this stuff like nobody's business, and this is how you make your living talking about this stuff. Does any of this stuff kind of ring a bell or make you think, with all this information, do you have any theories?
Yeah, I mean, the Hadron Collider stuff if anybody wants to really know, there are absolute ton of Hadron Colliders in the United States alone. So the Hadron Collider that's in CERN is the largest known Hadron Collider. And I say known for a reason, because we don't know what else is out there. I mean, CERN could even be a front just to cover up something else that we don't know. So I always throw that little bit of a caveat out there too. I do think there's a lot going on at CERN, especially when it comes to rituals and stuff that we're able to actually see on YouTube. I mean, they've got people in hoods chanting and praying. They had like a fake sacrifice where they reenacted a whole bodily sacrifice. And they said that, and then they came out with a statement saying they were just playing around. And it's like,
oh, yeah.
First off, they said they were making jokes. And I'm like, first off, I've never known of a nerd to be that funny in my life. So not geeks like that. You know what I mean? Like they're not funny. So yeah, I think the Hadron Collider thing, and this even goes to a story. So I got a good friend of mine, his name's Justin. And he and his friend Jay, they run a podcast called Cryptids of the Corn. Really good dudes. We actually just started a podcast with them called Floating Mushroom. First episode comes out in like a week. We're dropping an episode a month with these guys. It'll be on the Killer Mockingbird's platform, so you don't have to look too far from it. If you want to get to it early, though, you can go to our Patreon. Yeah, that's a shameless plug. I'm throwing one in there. So you can pay up, for brother. That. So... anyway, Justin is an actual biologist, right? So he's doing a different job now, but when he was, what he used to do was he used to go out with a team. They used to test like creeks, water systems, and they would check it for whatever life forms that are in there, right? They would see if there's any going extinct life forms or whatever they needed to do, right? Just to, if there's some sort of, you know, fish or something that's, you know, going extinct in this area, whatever, they'll find a way to help replenish it. So that's what he did for a living. But they would go to these weird spots. Well, one particular, this was actually in Kentucky, if I'm correct. He goes with his team. They have a key because they have to get through a gate to get into this area. And it's a super small creek. We're talking, you could put your foot in it and it wouldn't cover up your foot. You know what I mean? It's a super small creek. They would even check stuff that small. They unlock it. They start to go back there. Dark SUVs pull up. Guys pull out with guns on them and are basically, what are you doing here? And they hold them up for 3 to 4 hours. And they're trying to tell them, like, look, like, we're supposed to be back here. We actually work for the government. And somehow the hairs got crossed and nobody told anybody because they only go back there once a year to check on it. And it come to find out, they found out that they were, okay, you guys were supposed to be out here, but you're not anymore. Never come back here again. Wow. Well, while he was back there, he ended up seeing there was a mile-long Hadron Collider in Kentucky in that area. And they didn't want him back there because this section of the government had bought this area out and it took over. So there's a Hadron Collider there. So to your point of the Hadron Collider, there could be Hadron Colliders anywhere because they're all over the place. People don't really know about this, but they're everywhere. So it's not just at CERN. They're in like some of the most remote places you wouldn't even think of. And there's some that are super small. We're talking feet, just feet long. I think the smallest one ever made was by a dude in Florida. And it was, I don't know, maybe like under a foot, like a small Hadron Collider. And he was a scientist, but he actually got into a big spat with the government over because he built it and he wouldn't give it to him. And he, I don't know. It was a whole deal with that.
He did.
But to your point, there could very well be a Hadron Collider in there. Also, I don't know if you know the actual story about what they say they've seen through this telescope and what could be headed this way. So
lay it on me, brother.
So they're saying that they're looking, they say looking, but then they mix the verbiage up sometimes too, like they've seen, but they're looking for a cosmic object. So when it reaches the Earth, it's going to cause 3 days of darkness. I find that interesting. The number three, and the environment is going to change into fire and sulfur when this object gets here. So it had me thinking, because I've been on some really deep dives here recently over the past few months about old Earth. And if you know anything about gap theory in the Bible and what that means, a lot of guys like Quayle, Gary Wayne, that are really big into Nephilim, but also into the pre-Adamite theory. They get into all this stuff. So this is it's my personal belief that between Genesis 1-1 and Genesis 1-2, there's billions of years. And I think that carbon dating, and I know a lot of Christians don't want to take on board this, but I think carbon dating isn't that off. I think that it's there for a reason. I think it can be off to some degree, just like any instrument. But I do think that it actually does work pretty well, especially because there's been a lot of Christian scientists that have used it. So, and even they have come out and said, well, like, yeah, it's pretty accurate to some degree, right? And I say this a lot on my podcast and other people's podcasts, but just for people that are listening here, you know, in Genesis 1-1, it said that God created the heavens and the earth. But then in Genesis 1-2, it said the earth was without form and void. So it doesn't make any sense, because when God creates something, it's perfect, right? So the gap theory is that something happened between Genesis 1-1 and Genesis 1-2. Because if you notice, when God creates the earth in 7 days, there's different days. There's one day where he just divides the waters. He doesn't even create anything that day. He's literally just dividing the waters to open up the land that's already underneath. So what happened in that old earth realm that allowed the earth to be destroyed again? When you think about the flood, the deluge, right? We always go to that with Noah and what happened there. And most people that know anything about the Bible know about Noah and the ark, yeah. Right? God made a promise he would never destroy the earth by water again. He never said he hadn't before. Like, that could have very well happened before. And I'm getting into some of this, Billy and William, because when they're talking about this cosmic object that's coming, if you know anything about the Samarangana Sutradhara, which is an architectural book that came out from the Hindus, this is an old book written in Sanskrit. It's really just about architecture. It's about how to build buildings, it's a lot of poetic ways of how to do it, right? But there is like a ton of pages on this thing called the Vimana. And the Vimana is a spaceship. It is they call it the flying chariot, but it's more akin to like a flying palace. This is what these things were these like flying palaces. And if you connect dots with what these Vimanas, what time period they could have been, this was probably in this older time period. Matter of fact, the Vimanas talk about heavenly beings coming down in these Vimanas and transporting people to other places and vice versa. So now you start getting into, what were these Vimanas used for? They also say they were highly destructive. So this kind of goes into some of the theory during Old Earth, when it could have been these angel wars, these angelic wars between Yahweh's faction and Lucifer's faction that were getting into it. And so this technology that they were in, that they were using, especially to transport to like Mars, which a lot of people think there was like angelic cities on Mars. And if you want to go a little further into the planet Rahab theories, which everyone says that planet Rahab was between Mars and Jupiter, that's that asteroid belt that's there. They say God destroyed planet Rahab because if you read through the text in the Bible, it akins Rahab in some places to being a place. So a lot of people, Steve Quayle being one of them, talks about it being a planet that Lucifer resided in. It was like where his faction went to, where they set up shop, essentially. But they were moving in and out. They were all over the earth. There were kingdoms on earth. There's so many verses in the Bible that talk about kingdoms on earth before the earth was created. It's wild. Like, it really gets pretty crazy. I could even get to, sorry, I'm getting off subject a little bit.
You're good.
But There's a verse in Jeremiah 4:23-25. And matter of I'll start with 23 because it makes a little more sense in the context. I beheld the earth, and lo, it was without form and void, and the heavens, and they had no light. So clearly this is the point in time when the earth was created. Then 24, I beheld the mountains, and lo, they trembled, and all the hills moved lightly. 25, I beheld, and lo, there was no man, and all the birds of the heavens were fled. Well, wait a minute. All the birds of the heavens were fled. Well, why are there birds there during a time period that the animals that we hadn't got to that day when animals were created? And this is crazy. If you read what birds means in Hebrew, it doesn't stand for birds. This was just the translation when it went into Latin. In Hebrew, it means flying creatures. So we don't even know what these flying creatures were. Again, we're getting into pre-Adamite, where dinosaurs, or as I like to call them, dragons, existed in this period of time, with angel cities and pre-Adamite man. There's a lot of stuff out there about that as well. We were created in God's image. There was never anything that ever said there wasn't any other man that was created or created by fallen angels. Let's not put that out of the scope either, because fallen angels have been tinkering around for a long time with genetics and everything else. So they've been doing a lot. And listen, I love when people give me pushback, especially Christians, when they say, only God can create. We can create. We're doing it in labs right now. We're creating animals right now in labs with knowledge, by the way, that we got from fallen angels. But we're creating right now in labs. We can clone people. We can clone animals for there. No lie. This is legit. You can go Google it. I'll give people the easy route. Go to Google. You can clone your pet for $50,000 right now. Literally.
Yes.
Clone your pet. If your pet dies, you can get your pet back. At least a version of it. Right.
Yeah. And
this is happening. They're creating. We are creating. Well, again, God creates perfectly, but creations can be made. So I did all that, Billy, to come back to the cosmic object. What if this is like some sort of Vimana that they know's coming? One of these palace ships, these ships are coming in. What these were ships of mass destruction. We're talking crazy destructive capabilities. It's so crazy that in this literature, in the Sutra Dhara, they tell you how to build it and what kind of fuel it runs off of, which we don't even have access to anymore, which is crazy. This was written in, like, we're talking Sanskrit. Like, this is wild when you think about it.
It's crazy, bro. But I'm wondering, because you have a Vatican insider years ago. He's even recorded on Coast to Coast AM. And his name was Father Malachi Martin. Incredible guy. He was the first one to drop what was really going on with these Catholic priests and these boys and the nefarious things going on, and even talked about, even wrote in some of his books, this evil Jesuit faction that was going on inside the Vatican. Well, anyway, in this interview, he had made the claim to, at the time it was Art Bell who was the host, that the Vatican... Art Bell is basically saying, look, they basically pushed the natives off the top of this mountain. Mm-hmm. And they strong-armed them in there. And Father Malachi Martin says, well, yeah, basically, the Vatican knows that an object of great import is headed this way. Better still, you have same guy, Tom Horn, wrote another book, and it came out not long ago. I believe it's called The Messenger. And he talks about asteroid Apophis. And he talks about, now keep in mind, Tom Horn and Chris Putnam predicted with total precision when the last pope would step down, the one that just passed away, Benedict. They predicted, and when it happened, people were floored. I mean, it knocked their junk into their watch pocket, bro. When they realized that these two guys who were not part of the Catholic order somehow, some way were able to predict with total precision when he would step down. So then at that point, they got worldwide acclaim. Well, the same guy, now I'm saying overlay what Father Malachi Martin said about what was coming in, which, by the way, people like Zachariah Sitchin said that it's Nibiru, which maybe you can talk about that in a little bit. And also, Tom Horn is predicting, I read the book, it's down there in my library right now, where basically in 2029, asteroid Apophis is coming to Earth. And basically, it's going to land on the other side of California. At least that's, even NASA once upon a time endorsed what was going on. Tom Horn, he goes through a series of events of how he arrived at this. And it's an extraordinary accounting of it. So do you think that there's a chance? Or what are your thoughts about, okay, I know you're thinking it could be a Vimana. Maybe it is. Or maybe a Vimana is just a another word for Nibiru. Or I don't even know a whole lot about this stuff. Do you have any thoughts or can you unpack any of that information?
Nibiru has been around for a long time as far as that. I mean, Sitchin made it pretty popular when he came out with his theories when it came to the Anunnaki and what he thought about them and them going back to Planet X. Oddly enough, recently, and I'd say in the past year to 2 years, scientists are saying that they've seen what looks like a giant dark planet past the asteroid belt, past Pluto. So they say there's something looming out there. They can't see through the asteroid belt. So if you know anything about how like the galaxy is, well, at least what they're, come on, man. Are they really telling us the truth? For argument's sake today, we're going to say that, hey, what they're showing us is true. You could see like you got the planets and they go around the rings. You could see like here and here, but you can't really see out like directly out that way. At least that's what they're telling us, right? They're telling us you can't see directly because you can't see through this asteroid belt, but they're seeing this. It's odd that they're now admitting to there being some sort of body.
Joel, let me just jump in there, brother. Let me jump in just a second. Sorry to interrupt you, but you got the hairs on the back of my neck stand up because that Lucifer device on that telescope, its primary purpose, because it sees in the infrared realm, and it's the only and the biggest of its kind ever created that we know of. Supposedly, they're working on one that's even bigger, and it's going to be down in Chile. But the whole purpose of this device, it's funny that you say you can't see through this thing with a regular telescope. Well, through this binocular infrared telescope that they are able to see through dust clouds and particles and stuff like that. Huh. Sorry to interrupt you, bro, but you just kind of made me think, okay, you can't be seen from the regular thing, but apparently this, what makes this telescope extraordinary is that it can see through the dust and debris.
Yeah, and I knew that about the infrared with the Lucifer telescope, and that makes a lot of sense. So then you start really spinning, you know, what's on this planet, right? I know a lot of people think Anunnaki, and this is where they went back to after they helped create man and that whole rigmarole. I think that Anunnaki, well, the Anunnaki themselves, the original Anunnaki, I believe, were Nephilim. I think that's what especially Sumerians called Nephilim. They were gods. Like, people need to understand that the giants of old were also considered gods. They were demigods, you know, especially in Greek culture, but they're considered gods. I mean, they had superhuman abilities. They were bigger, faster, stronger than everybody else. They could kind of do what they wanted to do. Obviously, unless you have the power of God on your hands, you're like the Israelites and you just come and start wiping them out. but at the end of the day, these giants were considered gods. Now, if you know anything about the Anunnaki were created by the gods. So these gods were what we would consider the fallen angels. These were the ones that helped, you know, copulated with human women and then created these Anunnaki. It just spins out a lot of ideas. This also goes into a lot of my theories of portaling and a lot of these Nephilim that have portaled off Earth, that portaled at least into another dimension or maybe even portaled off into another planet to where they reside until a time that has yet to be determined. So in the end times, I believe that Nephilim will be a huge part of these plans. I think they're going to be. I think that, you know, a lot of people give me pushback on Nephilim coming back because they say, well, they're coming back. God said it. No, he didn't. He never said that. He just chopped off the fallen angels at the knees whenever they had sex with humans or human women. So here's a good question for you. If they're getting thrown in the abyss for having sex with human women, what if they found a loophole for that? And this is one of the things I've been really thinking hard about the past few months and really past year. What if the loophole is they're not having sex with them on Earth? What if this is how these gray aliens, quote unquote, are abducting these women, abducting these men, taking them off, taking, you know, the eggs and the sperm, and they're doing whatever kind of, you know, technological splicing with on these other planets or wherever else, and they're creating these armies for later. I think there's a huge possibility that this could be happening in another place. Or what if it's another dimension they're doing this in? So it's not even in our realm that this is happening. And I've read some things recently, and I can't talk about what I read because it's a very secret book. But it confirmed a lot of what I've been looking into when it comes to Nephilim being in another realm and armies being built. So my question is, this Planet X, this Nibiru that's there, what if Sitchin's right in his own way? What if he just has the idea wrong, right? This is the people that really push back against the Bible and biblical, you know, scripture as far as who God is, and God is the only God, right? They're more of a, you know, there really isn't, you know, gods, it's aliens, that mentality, right? But what if he's right? I mean, I look at Sumerian culture, they got a lot right too. You can connect a lot of the dots. This is how we really dig and we find out what's really going on, because the Bible just gives us touches on a few things when it comes to historical stuff, but really it's a manual for how we need to live our lives. And that's what I really look at it as in a lot of ways, and how I need to connect with people. But when it comes to figuring out what's really going on in these existential spaces of giants and fallen angels or aliens or whatever, you have to read the whole, because fallen angels created these religions for these cultures. They were the gods. When they worshiped gods and they saw gods, they did see gods. They did. In their mind, these were gods. These were fallen angels. They have much more just extensive power. We're talking, you know, if we even get into what seraphim and cherubim do, they were the closest ones to the throne. I mean, these are just high-powered supernatural beings. You know, if the average person saw one, that's a god. You know what I mean? If sure. You're seeing multiples, and then they're having, you know, children with women, and they're creating, you know, bigger versions of people, you're going to believe what they say, and it's going to get passed down through lore and mythologies throughout history. But there's a lot of truth that's interwoven in all these mythologies, and you got to take that on board. So when Sitchin talks about Planet X and when he talks about the Anunnaki, you got to take it as some value to it, to what he's talking about, because you got to look at what the Sumerians saw and thought at that time.
Well, I know we're coming to the end of this, Joel, but I want to kind of round it out with, man, you've given me a whole lot to think about here. I'm telling you, I just want to know, because you hit on a lot of things that overlay with the Bible, and for some reason, the hardest people to even, I'm not saying that anybody out there should believe me, believe you, believe William, or any of the things we research, but why do you think there is such a massive kickback and resistance to mainstream evangelicals to even have this conversation? Why don't you hear anything about this in Sunday school? Why don't you hear, because honestly, and all the kids that go in there and they sit and they check out, I'll tell you what, the Bible is it's the best adventure story ever. And especially if you look into some of these, okay, so if you don't look at it as canon scripture, well, you have these other apocryphal books that are also in there that really open up a little bit wider what might have happened in Genesis 6. But as a guy that you yourself, I know you've lived a very colorful and interesting life, and I'd love to talk more with you about that in the future. But at the end of the day, as somebody who was initially raised in the church, why do you think mainstream evangelicals will not even consider what you and I are talking about today?
I mean, several reasons. First and foremost, the church was infiltrated a long time ago, specifically by the Roman Catholics to take out the supernatural from the Bible. The Bible is a very esoteric book. Let's explain. Esoteric is not a bad word. People get that so mixed up. They think occult. As soon as you say the word esoteric, it just means hidden knowledge. There's a lot of hidden knowledge in the Bible if you just connect with God and dig deep enough. There's a lot in that Bible. So they wanted to take the esoteric out. And on the flip side, what these fallen angels and Satan, their biggest plan, their biggest plot was to make this other side, the quote-unquote occult, attractive because people have an innate yearning to connect with God and the supernatural. It's what we were built on. When it said that we were made in the image of God, that's what it means. Not only do we look like him, but we have him with us. So we have this innate need when we wake up to connect to him, whether we admit it to ourselves or not. We do. So what's the best way to exploit that? You infiltrate the church. You take every bit of that out. Outside of the fact that there's a being that created us, you take all that out of it. You make it super legalistic. You harp on all the wrong things. You divide us and divide us and divide us and divide us into a million different denominations. Protestants don't get off easy on this either because they've been just as bad, especially over here in the States when the Freemasonic orders infiltrated them. So they're not getting it off easy either. I love when the Protestants and the Catholics go at each other. I'm like, you're both in the same boat. So you got that going on. But then on the other side with the occult, it's like, hey, here's a way to connect. Here's a way to get in tune with these gods. Here's a way to connect to the spirit realm. Here's the new age. Here's Satanism. Here's all of these things that you can connect with over here. So what you do is you infiltrate both sides. You control both narratives. And then as it trickles down, you just dumbify a Christian until there's nothing left of their brain cells. And I'm not going to get you banned, Billy, but I will say this. In the past 3 years, we all know a lot of weird stuff's been going on, right? We know a lot of weird stuff's been going on since 2020, right? What I'm going to say about it is this. A lot of Christians got duped and fell for it. Just like everybody else, they went and did exactly what the government
told
them.
Bro, you can come right out and say it. We're in the podcast realm, bro. You can say anything you want.
You don't have to center yourself here, Joel.
Listen. These Christians run around getting jabbed up left and right. They should have been the first one standing up. Like, is there a brain cell left with anybody anymore? Here's the thing. I grew up in the church. My dad's a preacher, still a great man, still preaches, great man. He was always about the supernatural. My father was fortunate enough, and misfortunate in some ways, but he went down the road of trying to become a devil worshiper. He saw a lot of paranormal and stuff that is unexplainable to the average person. He's told me stories on stories on stories. So he's seen it all. He's seen a warlock chant over a rope and it go up in the air hissing like a snake. So like he's seen it all to know that it exists. So when he became a Christian, he never denied that part of it. And my dad's got a lot of flack over the years because he's pushed back against the traditional or commercial Christian narrative. And I think for me, part of my journey was going out, doing a lot of things I shouldn't have done, connect with a lot of these occult things. I became a Freemason. A lot of these things that I saw ended up coming back to where originally I started. But I came back with a deeper understanding of what's really going on out there. And I think a lot of it, why I walked away from it, is like the average Christian pissed me off. Like, why did I want to be a part of something where these people are bickering all the time? All they do is fight over the Bible, over the dumbest stuff too. But they don't even accept the fact that the Bible's talking about giants. Do you know that they try to they try to justify that? They even try to say that the sons of God were actually just men. When clearly in the text, you can connect it to other scriptural texts. That's not what it means. They were angelic beings. They had sex with women. And they created giants. As a matter of fact, they're still doing it. So yes. This is still going on. So I get fired up, Billy, really, and William, because I don't understand the way Christians think. They're so closed-minded. You should be the most open-minded. You believe that a being created you. At that point, you should be open-minded to whatever after that. How are you that closed-minded? You think that God, a being, created us and was like, nope, it's all going to be normal now, guys. Just chill, you know, go watch a football game and everything's cool. There's nothing going on. There's no such thing as beings and all this stuff. It's ludicrous. It's absolutely ludicrous. People blow my mind. So yes, Billy, that's what happened. The church got infiltrated. They dumbed us down for a long time. They do it all the time. In the Bible, it talks about false prophets. That's what they've been doing. They have to do it. And then they make the other side super attractive. And I get it because I went down that road. I wanted that power. I wanted that knowledge. You know, I thought about it long and hard. And I tell people that went down these paths for money and fame. That's the easy answer. Honestly, when I started really backtracking on why I did a lot of what I did, it was for the hidden knowledges. That's what I always strive for. And I found out that when I started looking at God in a different way, and I consider it really the correct way of looking at how God does things, not that we ever really know, but for me, the correct way was to understand that there's so much about him we don't understand. There's so much about this universe and other parallel dimensions, all this stuff that we don't understand. You know who does understand it, though? These elites and all the stuff they're doing behind the scenes. They're doing it on Mount Graham, all this stuff. They know all these hidden things, and they're trying to keep that away from us because ultimately, if we understand that God has the power over all this, and we understand that he put us here to be connected to him and be connected to this other world, we don't need them. We don't need any of them. And that's why they do it. But the main thing they needed to do was to control the Christians. Control. And I hate even really using the word Christian because it's such a bad connotation now. I prefer follower of Christ, follower of Jesus. Yahuwah. That's who we need to follow at the end of the day.
Bro,
screw all this other crap.
I couldn't have said it better, man. Man, you dropped so many incredible things here, and good night, man. I wish I didn't have another engagement here before too long, bro, because honestly, I'd love to go another hour because it's like, man, we just get this man fired up and then now we got to end up ending this thing, bro. Where can people, where is the best way for everybody to find you? Now, you do incredible music, both of which, by the way, folks, we're playing his music on the front and the back end of this. He even did a song on behalf of us. It was called Photosynthesis.
Yeah,
and of course we didn't link that one up today. We put in some of my favorites of all time that they got from the Van Tesla, Tesla music library. Where can everybody find what you're doing right now, bro? Because almost certainly now this is typically a permaculture podcast, but after we're going to start putting in bonus episodes where we talk to people, very interesting people like yourself, and maybe a number of others, where we kind of go outside the box a little bit, but this little experiment. is where it could have been.
Homesteading channel talking about Mount Graham.
Bro, they could have threw me. They could have took me. Oh, you want to see the top of this mountain, bro? And they throw me down in them pit with some of them Nephilim. And,
I'm not going to lie to you, Billy. What a way to go, man. I would not even mad about it, man. I would be so happy if they threw me in there with the Nephilim. First off, I'm a ginger. And I've been doing some backtracking, and gingers, I guess they have like Nephilim blood in them.
A lot of redheaded giants, bro.
It's a lot of redheaded giants. So, maybe they look at me and be like, maybe I won't mess with him. Maybe he's kind of like a little piece of us or whatever. So,
yeah, it's either
tall are you? How tall are you, Joel? If you're over 6'4", you're joining them.
No, I don't know, bro. You're still a shrimp in their world, man. You never know, man. You get down in that Nephilim pit and you got a big old giant saying, put the lotion on its skin, bro. You be down there. It puts the lotion in the basket, yeah. Yeah, you don't want to end up. How can everybody find you, my brother?
Yeah, for anybody that's looking for what myself and my partner Sean Chris do at Kill the Mockingbirds, the quickest and easiest way to find us is go to our Linktree. So go to Linktree/Kill the Mockingbirds. If you're looking for my music, you can go to Linktree/Van Tesla Music. And our main hub that we do a lot of social media stuff that we will talk to you and chat with you, go to @KillTheMockingbirds Podcast on Instagram. You can actually subscribe to us there now because we, for $4.99 a month, we set up special chats for subscribers. So we talk about a lot of stuff. If you're a subscriber, you get a cool badge, an Instagram badge by your name. So when you contact us, DM us, we see the badge. We know that, hey, this is one of our subscribers. We're going to talk to them. So we'll talk to you all day. We'll give you insider info on what we're doing before we come out with it. I've also got special videos that I put up in the subscription area of Instagram. So there's a whole area that unlocks when you become a subscriber. So you can come follow us there. And generally speaking, the link trees will get you to every single place. If you're looking for us, our podcast, it's on all platforms, Spotify, Apple Podcast, Podcasting 2.0, Stitcher, wherever you want to go, just look for Kill the Mockingbirds. We drop heat every week. And if you're looking to get some special episodes that you can't find anywhere else, you go to our Patreon /Kill the Mockingbirds. And we got special episodes that we put up there all the time.
Well, we'll link everything down in the description box.
Yeah, we'll get that done, awesome. Bro. And also, we're going to I'm going to sign up for that Patreon. I said that before, but man, I love the information you guys put out. You wrap it in humor, and honestly, that last episode you did with Tupac, I mean, it may be old hat to other people out there. To me, it was absolutely mind-boggling, bro. I can't thank you enough for your time, man. And we're going to just kind of ease on out with some of Joel's music right here. This is my favorite. They want to push me to the center like a cell. They want to spin up at the center of the nexus. Me.